On today's Spotlight on KRWC, the second Wednesday of the month of October, we reserve time on the second Wednesday to chat with folks from Wright County Public Health. And this month, we're talking with Public Health Nurse Christy Rathmanner, who joins us to talk a little bit about the upcoming influenza season. Christy, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you along with us and talk about a season that I think most of us would just as soon forget about, but boy, it could be potentially a double whammy here. So we want to talk about the influenza season and the importance of vaccinations and things like that. Before we get started with that, maybe bring us up to date a little bit about what your role has been during the whole COVID season so far of 2020.
Sure. Thanks for having me. It's always nice to chat with you guys. So as part of our COVID-19 response, I initially was working with case investigation and contact tracing, so doing interviews with individuals who were confirmed positive and kind of doing that contact tracing to make sure people are aware that they were exposed and staying home just to try to prevent any spread that might occur in the community. Since probably the middle of August, I've switched over to doing our vaccination planning for COVID-19 vaccine. So it aligns a lot more with what my normal role is as immunization program coordinator for the county. So doing a lot of planning as far as what COVID-19 vaccine will look like, where it will be given, things like that. So a lot of unknowns right now, but trying to plan as much as we can before we get additional information from MDH and the CDC. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
There's been lots of information just about daily for a long period of time as we inch closer toward hopefully an effective vaccine for COVID-19. And as you kind of alluded to there, once there is something on the market or available, there will be that initial rush of vaccinations. But after that, from what I'm kind of gathering from you, it'll start to be kind of like a little bit resembling the flu shot type season.
Yeah, so initially once we have something that's approved for use, we know that there's not going to be enough vaccine available for everybody all at once. So it is going to be a little bit more phased as far as just based on the number of doses that are available. And we can chat about that too, about who's going to get it first and when. But at this point, we're not entirely sure even which vaccine will be approved first. So it's a little bit hard to guess what it's going to look like. We don't know if the strains are going to shift like they do with the flu vaccine, if it's going to be a yearly thing, if it's going to be a one and done thing. It's a little bit challenging, but hopefully we can get everybody at least vaccinated soon.
I got to think from a public health perspective, this is kind of the major league event that all of public health studies for and prepares for all time, like the pinnacle of outbreak.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when I talk to community partners too, we always talk about how you read about this in school and you prepare for it, but you never think it's actually going to happen. And I know a lot of listeners probably remember back to H1N1 in 2009, where that was kind of a smaller pandemic, I would say, than what we're in now. Which was a little bit different too, because that was a flu virus. So we're used to having flu circulating. It was just kind of a unique one. So development of that vaccine was a lot faster and a lot easier because we knew how to develop a flu vaccine. So, and then that was more, we didn't have to worry about social distancing at that point. People could just, it was first come, first serve in some areas. So this does bring a lot more challenges as far as what it's going to look like when we do vaccinate the public. We probably can't have people just coming into a gymnasium and getting vaccinated just because of social distancing. So trying to navigate how we reach all these people in a safe manner. So looking at, do we do a drive-through? Do we make sure people have appointments? It's a lot of coordinating that we're trying to do with limited information. So It's been busy, but you're exactly right. We never thought that, you know, we're 7 months in right now, and we don't know when we're going to get back to a quote-unquote normal life, as I'm sure everyone's probably feeling right now. So it's been interesting, for sure.
Well, I'm sure public health, like everybody else, hopes it's sooner than later. I mean, it's a whole new challenge, I'm sure, for your profession, but even so, you guys are human too and would like to get back to some semblance of normalcy here.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, let's shift to the influenza season now. We're kind of getting into this would be a normal start or you know, kind of the push for influenza vaccines. I'll let you go ahead and start talking a little bit about influenza and a reminder about what that all is. As we work along here, we'll talk about some of the confusions between. It's going to be kind of some confusing overlaps here this year.
Yes, it is going to be very confusing. So just as a little refresher, we'll talk about what influenza is. And so influenza is a respiratory illness that's caused by viruses that attack the lungs, nose, and throat. Sometimes people will say they have the flu, but they're really talking about a stomach bug that they have. So the norovirus is something that can cause some stomach upset, diarrhea, things like that. So just don't be confused with what influenza is versus that stomach flu that people talk about. So flu symptoms can be mild or severe, but they typically cause a cough, sore throat, body aches, and fever. Influenza can also look like a cold sometimes, so that's something to watch for too, especially this time of year, kids getting back to school. I feel like we've already seen quite a few colds and trying to figure out, is it a cold? Is it the flu? Is it COVID? It's going to get complicated. But typically influenza symptoms are more severe than a cold, and they start very suddenly. So a cold, you typically kind of build up that stuffiness, things like that. Flu symptoms, it's kind of like they just start out of nowhere. Most healthy people will recover from influenza without complication, but certain people are at risk for severe complications such as pneumonia, bacterial infections, and hospitalization. Children under the age of 2, adults over 65, pregnant women, and people with chronic health conditions are most at risk for these severe complications. And then just to review last flu season, so the 2019-2020 flu season, we had in the state of Minnesota over 4,000 influenza-related hospitalizations, 921 influenza-like illness outbreaks in schools, 153 deaths, and 3 pediatric deaths just in our state last year. So even with people staying home, you know, March is still considered flu season, and that's kind of when everything stopped. For lack of a better word, and people weren't out and about, we still had quite a significant flu season last year. So,
And as I was mentioning, that's where kind of this overlap comes in, because now you're going to have what is considered, quote unquote, a normal flu season, whether it be, you know, light season, medium or hard season. And then we're going to still have the whole COVID situation going on at the same time.
And it's going to be very hard to separate out what's what. So that's why, you know, for schools and probably for your work or job, you're probably most likely, if you have these symptoms, going to have to get tested for COVID just to kind of rule something out. So
I would think, though, that
it's a challenge.
Yeah, I would think, though, that many of the precautions that hopefully all of us have been getting used to taking, as far as the, you know, the very first thing at the onset of the pandemic, the very first thing emphasized has been something that, you know, people have been emphasizing forever, and that is good hand washing. And kind of all starts with that, and then everything else that you do, hopefully maybe that being in place might help to tamp down the flu season a little bit too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm sure there's quite a few people that keep hand sanitizer in your car just by default now. So just making sure you're washing your hands. If you can't wash your hands, use your hand sanitizer. And it all starts with good hand hygiene. You're exactly right.
All right, let's talk about the flu vaccine now. Each year, we highlight this every year, and we've been doing that for a long, long time. Each year, maybe you can explain about how they decide a little bit about which strains are the most likely to develop, and they kind of roll those into the seasonal vaccine.
Yeah, so the flu virus is mutated over time. And so every year they have to, the CDC and the World Health Organization, they kind of look at what is currently circulating in different parts of the world. So we usually look at what's going on in Australia because they're typically a few months ahead of us in their flu season. So they look at what's circulating there, and then that kind of drives what we think is going to then circulate here. And then that is what strains get included in the flu vaccine. So there's A strains of virus and there's B strains, which is kind of complex. And then within those strains, there's multiple different variations. So this year we have what's called quadrivalent vaccine. So they have four total strains of influenza virus included in them, which is two A strains and two B strains, just to give a nice, we like to think of it as an umbrella, trying to get as much as we can, as much protection as we can for the viruses that will most likely be circulating, that experts think will be circulating in the U.S. Obviously, it's not always a perfect match because it mutates so quickly, but we do the best we can with what we know at that point. And then this year, also, in the past, we had a high-dose vaccine for individuals over the age of 65. So in that one, this year is the first year it is also a quadrivalent. In the past, it only had three strains, and now it has four as well. And in addition to those four strains, we have they have an increased amount of antigen in that vaccine, which is thought to elicit a better immune response for the elderly. So individuals over 65 typically don't have as robust of an immune response to the flu vaccine, and so that's why the putting more antigen in there is supposed to elicit a better response to get them more coverage that way. So we do have both of those available at Wright County Public Health. We're not out and about on the wall van like we have been in the past just because of everything going on, but we do have office appointments every week. So if you need them, come in, and we do require an appointment, but I'll give you that phone number later.
Sure. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but maybe we can kind of zero in on who should get the vaccine. You see at most pharmacies now signs that, hey, the flu shot is available. And so who should get vaccinated and when?
Yeah, so it's recommended that everyone 6 months of age and older get vaccinated every year. So as long as you're 6 months and up, it's recommended you come in. Some kids are going to need a booster dose, depending on how many doses they've had in the past. And it's really recommended to get it as soon as you can. It takes about 2 weeks to build up immunity in your system after vaccination. So I'd say October is the prime time for you to get it.
Okay. And it's the same if people have questions about, you know, should I get it from my doctor? Should I get it from public health? Is it okay to get it at the pharmacy? It's all the same vaccine, is it not?
Yeah. So there's different like brands, but it's all going to have the same strains. The only thing that's going to be different is whether if you're over 65, if you get the standard dose or the high dose. But yes, all of the vaccine will have the same strains in it. There's a limited number of vaccine that's trivalent and only has three strains versus the quadrivalent that has four. I don't know that very many places will have that anymore. I think mostly it's going to be the quadrivalent.
Okay. Now, the question that you probably have heard 10,000 times, is there any chance I could get the flu from the vaccine?
You're exactly right. We hear that a lot. And it can get kind of confusing because you might develop, you know, mild fever or some discomfort for a short time after vaccinating. But the flu shot that we have is not a live vaccine. So when we give that, it's a killed virus. So it's not going to replicate in your system the way that like the actual flu virus would. So when you're having this discomfort and this mild fever, it's just meaning that your body is developing the immune response to the vaccine, which is what we want. We want it to recognize that this is a foreign substance to build that immunity. So when you, when or if you are exposed to that virus, it can fight it off easier. And, you know, like we said earlier, there's a lot of things going around during flu season. There's many cold viruses. Now we have COVID. And so sometimes people can think that a different virus is the flu and, you know, all at the same time. So a little bit of a coincidence there. But if you do have some discomfort or mild fever, you're not, you don't have the flu. It's just your body reacting, which is a good sign.
And it seems to me, if I remember back from our programs on this topic in years past, a lot of investigation or a lot of study will show that even if there is a strain that's kind of like a little offshoot of something that's in the quadrivalent, odds are pretty good that even if it isn't 100% match, it'll help to fight it off and make it half as potent or you know, at least keep you a little bit protected.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And sometimes, and even if it is a full match, if you get infected, you might have much more mild symptoms than somebody who, I think we've all probably heard horror stories of somebody who's down and out for like a week because they got influenza. But if, you know, if you get the vaccine, even if you still get infected, it's going to be much more mild and you're going to be back to normal very, very much more, much sooner than if you hadn't gotten vaccinated.
Right. And so we covered also the fact that you can get this, you know, wherever is most convenient for you. If you have a planned doctor's visit anyway, and you want to just get it at your doctor's office, that's fine. But I think a lot of times, you know, probably for most people, the more economical way is, you know, right at the local pharmacy or wherever you do business that way too.
Yeah, yep. And we just want people to get vaccinated. I don't care where you go. But yeah, exactly. There's a lot of, I don't know if there's immunization appointments a lot at doctor's offices. I don't know what's going on now with COVID, if they're a lot busier. But yeah, like your pharmacy or anything like that, as long as you can get in there and it's convenient for you, just get it done.
Christy Rathmanner is our guest. She's a public health nurse with Wright County Public Health. We're talking about the importance of the influenza vaccine, and especially during this time of COVID. We talked a little bit about kind of the overlap there as far as precautions, and you hope and you think that with people wearing masks and gloves, it's, you know, sometimes, and if nothing else, the hand sanitizer, the hand-washing regimen. We talked about how that could help ward off some of the influenza. You know, sometimes there are side benefits to something that's pretty nasty.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Let's talk a little bit more specifically about that COVID-19 vaccine situation now. You mentioned a little bit about what it might look like once we get to a point where people are being vaccinated, but maybe if you would like to spend a moment or two about this whole trial situation. We hear about it in the news all the time, but I'm not sure if anybody completely understands the full phases of all the things that have to happen here.
Yeah, so there are quite a bit of phases that need to be done and completed and shown to be safe before the FDA will approve anything for use. So there are three phases of vaccine trials that need to be completed prior to approval. So in phase one, scientists give the vaccine to a small number of people to test safety and dosage, as well as to confirm that it does stimulate the immune system. Typically in this phase, manufacturers will test two or three different dosage levels to see which one produces a good immune response with the least amount of side effects or discomfort to the patient. So even though you know, sometimes people feel like more is better, the highest dose might not be the best as far as comfort to the patient. So they're looking at risk versus benefit in that small study there. And then in phase two expanded trials, scientists give the vaccine to hundreds of people split into groups such as like children versus elderly to see if the vaccine acts differently in them. So we know from, like we discussed before, the flu vaccine that the elderly may not have as robust of an immune response as children or young adults. So this will kind of help determine the effectiveness in different populations, looking at things like that. These trials also further test for safety and the ability to stimulate the immune system. Then the phase 3 trials are the ones we probably hear the most about, and those are the big ones. In these trials, the vaccine is given to thousands of people and tested for efficacy and safety. So some participants in these trials will receive a placebo, and some will receive the actual vaccine, and that is done in order to compare how the immune system responds to the placebo versus the vaccine. And then they also look for the effectiveness at decreasing infection rate for the actual virus for those who receive the vaccine. These trials can determine also if the vaccine protects against the coronavirus and are large enough to reveal any rare side effects that might be missed in earlier studies just based on the size alone. They will continue to follow participants after vaccination to look for any side effects, and we currently have 4 vaccines in phase 3 trials in the U.S. So in addition to those, I talk a lot about safety in there because I think that that's something that is important and people are concerned about. And then also with that, we have safety and efficacy monitoring by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. So for those who aren't familiar with the ACIP, they are the group of medical and public health experts who develop the recommendations on the use of all vaccines in the United States. So they've been holding monthly meetings. They usually only meet quarterly. They've been holding monthly meetings just to talk about COVID vaccine safety and efficacy, and they have a lot of discussion around that. So I think there's a lot being done to ensure the safety and efficacy of the vaccine. So I know that that's a concern, especially with how fast things seem to be going. I think there's a little bit of concern, but just know that they are looking at safety very, very carefully. And part of the reason why it's going so fast is because these manufacturers actually had funding from the federal government before vaccines approved, which isn't usually the case. Usually they have to be approved for use before they start manufacturing. And at this point, because this is a pandemic and so concerning, they were allowed to produce this even before anything is approved, which is good because then they'll have something available right away. But
we talked a little bit earlier about who might be in the first, you know, once it's ready, who might be in the first line for vaccination. And it mm-hmm. probably will start with, you know, frontline workers, healthcare people, first responders, et cetera.
Yep. So we do know that it's going to be a phased approach. It could start as early as November of this year with limited doses available. It really is just dependent on how these phase 3 trials go and if the FDA approves the vaccine for use. So once a vaccine is approved by the FDA, it then goes to that advisory committee who will call an emergency session to review all of the safety data and make sure that things, even though it's already approved by the FDA, they're kind of the gold standard and they make those recommendations on who gets it first. But you're right, likely it will be healthcare workers and long-term care staff, because we're trying to protect those that are most vulnerable. So those long-term care staff, it's really important to keep those residents protected. So by kind of surrounding them with protection, it just by default keeps them protected as well. Even though that's probably the initial priority group, we're still going to have to prioritize within that priority group just based on the limited number of doses we'll have available. So it just kind of throws another layer of complexity, because as a healthcare worker, you might be included in the initial priority group, but then we still have to prioritize the initial priority group, if that makes sense, just based on, it just really depends on how many doses are available through the federal government and into the states and then to the county level. So
it's kind of like
we'll hear more soon.
It's kind of like a search filter on your computer. You decide a topic and then filter it down to get the final list there.
Yeah, so the Minnesota Department of Health has put together a COVID-19 vaccine allocation advisory group that's looking at prioritizing those groups. So I actually sit on that group, and so we had one meeting already. We're meeting again the beginning of November, and hopefully we can kind of have a good discussion on how do we prioritize these priority groups. It's going to be a challenge, but it's good that we're thinking about it ahead of time. It's not just going to be a first come, first serve, whoever can get there. You know, it's going to be thoughtful, and it shouldn't take too long. We're hearing it shouldn't take too long from the first doses to really ramp up manufacture. So that's good. So at least we will continue to have a steady stream coming in, and we can just expand our efforts.
It'll be really it'll be really interesting to see. And boy, I tell you, this is going to be, you know, right or wrong, or mistakes or not mistakes, or, you know, good, bad decisions all along the way. People have been kind of feeling their way through this, but boy, this is going to be looked back on as, okay, if anything like this ever happens again, now here's what went right, here's what did not go right. And so you got a little bit more of a tactical blueprint, if you will.
Right, yeah, and that will be helpful. Hopefully it never happens again, but
exactly.
It will be helpful in the future.
Yeah. We're wrapping up our spotlight today. Christy Rathmanner is a public health nurse with Wright County Public Health. Maybe some people have been wondering, and I'm not sure if it's still there or not, but you had a kind of one of these drive-through tent-type systems outside your building there. Is that still up or not?
It is. It's not up right now because of the wind advisory. It's pretty windy out there.
Yeah.
We had been doing our immunization clinics out there, having individuals drive through there, and we're also using them for our, every year we do employee food clinics. So we have them just driving through instead of funneling a bunch of people into our building, just to kind of minimize that exposure. And it's also kind of a test for, should we need to do this for COVID vaccine? Is this going to work? Is this feasible? It depends on the time of year. If it's middle of winter, maybe not. But at least getting down the flow of traffic and figuring out if this is feasible in the future or not. So it's kind of a dual purpose. But right now it is not up. But if it is up, we don't do COVID testing. We've had a couple people drive in looking for that. But it's just our immunization tent. So
yeah, a little bit confusing because it's, I think, pretty much exactly the same type of tent that is set up at, the Alina Clinic in Buffalo for COVID testing. I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
Yep.
It is confusing.
All right, well, it's a big, big topic, and one that certainly is not going away anytime real soon. So we hopefully the next time we talk, we'll be talking more, focusing on the vaccination portion of it. We appreciate all the information, and one more time about urging people to get out for the flu shot.
Yeah, so you can, if you need help getting a flu shot, we're giving them to you. You can call us at 763-682-7516 to make an appointment. Otherwise, just call up your clinic or your pharmacy and get in and get vaccinated.
All right, Christy, thanks so much for all the information today. Best of luck to you and all your colleagues at Public Health, and we'll talk again soon.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Okay,
have a good day.
Thanks a lot. Christy Rathmanner, public health nurse with Wright County Public Health, on today's Spotlight on KRWC.